The loss of a marriage can lead to an endless number of changes in our lives, and some of these changes can be very painful. We may be overwhelmed with thoughts of an uncertain future.
The Catholic Church is present in these difficult times through Divorce Ministry, providing support, guidance, and resources to divorced Catholic families.
We want to help you rebuild your life by walking in faith in the company of Jesus Christ.
For more information, please call 312-534-8353 or go to our website, marriageandfamilyministries.org.
The Cemetery Ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 44 Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic cemeteries willing to help you in your time of loss. Call 708-449-6100 or visit CatholicCemeteriesChicago.org. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Relevant Radio, 950 AM, 930 AM, and 1270 AM. Talk radio for Catholic life. Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that touch our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 a.m., 930 a.m., and 1270 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
The way a couple handles money in their marriage can bring them together to strengthen them as a marriage bonder or pull them apart and become a marriage buster. You're listening to Marriage and Family Matters today, and we're focusing on money, specifically money and marriage. I'm Kim Haggerty.
Hey, and I'm Frank Hannigan, and we're talking today with Kelly Long, a CPA and certified financial planner with Financial Finesse, and she's also a researcher for the book What Your Financial Advisor Isn't Telling You, which is going to be released on January 5th. Kelly is also one of the presenters for our online marriage preparation program at CatholicMarriagePrepClass.com. She does a great segment on finances. Thanks for joining us today, Kelly.
So glad to be here, Kim and Frank. Thanks for having me.
Hey, as we're getting started today, could you just give us an overview on how did you get into helping individuals, people, couples handle money? Where'd that come from?
Well, it's a fun story. I won't give you the whole history, but I started my career in accounting and very quickly found my way into wanting to help everyday people with their money. I worked in a bank trust department at the beginning of my career, and so I worked with wealthy people, but I also worked with what I call the other 99%, normal people who had just had maybe a grandparent leave them money in trust for education. And I noticed that whether or not people actually had money really made no difference to how they felt about it. So some of the richest people were still worried about money, and people of modest means sometimes were totally at peace even though they didn't have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also noticed that the people who had money, just because they were rich, I guess, didn't necessarily mean that they understood how it worked or how to effectively manage it. So the more I learned about the financial services industry, the more I understood that there wasn't a way for people to get answers to their financial questions without some type of bias. It's tough for financial planners to make money without selling a product or managing money, and so I wanted to be able to provide that in a way that I had no hidden agenda, and I hate selling. I hate feeling like there's some ulterior motive. And then, you know, I just have always preferred to work with people who are like me, so couples and money has been something that's near and dear to my heart just because my parents are an inspiration for me. I wish they had had access to an unbiased financial planner when they were making decisions earlier in life. And, of course, I'm married, so my own experiences translate well into my work.
Absolutely.
And Kelly, we know you're Catholic, and we wanted to ask you, is there a Catholic view of money? Or, you know, we kind of think that focusing on money makes people seem greedy.
You know, I do find that the people who kind of have an idealistic view of money and they kind of avoid it, it tends to be almost like a Christian base. They feel like, well, you know, we learn in church that the love of money is the root of all evil. I finally dug into that, and it actually says that in the Bible in Timothy, but it actually reads, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So it's not money that's evil. It's when we put the love of money ahead of all else, which really is greed. So I think we all know that's evil. But paying attention to your money and taking care of it is not evil. In fact, if you're fortunate to have it, you almost have a responsibility to take care of it, to honor the gift that you've been given. So as long as it's not your sole focus or you're not using other people to get more money, actually taking care of your money is actually a good thing to do as a Catholic.
Absolutely. And Kelly, you're aware that our office works with, you know, thousands and thousands of engaged couples every year. You know, finances and handling money is one of the things that we handle or we talk about briefly. Can you give us some of the steps or some of the ideas that you think would be important for engaged couples to discuss or to have a conversation about?
Definitely. I talk to young people who are getting married all the time. Just this week I was FaceTiming with some friends who got married a couple weeks ago. And I think it's really important that you go into your marriage with your eyes wide open about your financial situation, both your own and your partner's. So I do believe that opposites tend to attract, and that is true in the financial sense especially. More often than not, a spender marries a saver, and that can be really good because the saver can save the spender from him or herself. And on the flip side, sometimes spenders can help kind of those more scroogey savers live a little. So there's gifts that both types of personalities bring from a financial perspective. But making sure you know everything that's going on with your finances before you enter into that covenant, before you walk down the aisle, is really important to maybe heading off some disillusionment and money fights once you get married. So you got to pull each other's credit reports, know what each other's debts are, know your spending styles. And I think the easiest way to kind of get there is to talk about what money meant to you growing up. So almost just like making it more of a getting-to-know-you conversation and less of a business meeting at the start is a good way to start talking about it.
When you talked about, when you were growing up and what money meant, that brings us back to the thought of families of origin. Is that a good way to learn about money from your family of origin? Do family of origins, mom and dad or whatever that family looked like, do they really impact the way an individual views money and handles money as they get a little bit older and head towards marriage?
I definitely think so, because most money fights are much deeper than just money. I have a friend who calls it, we all have our own money DNA. So that's really deep-seated values or attitudes towards money that we might not even be fully aware of. Mm-hmm. And those are really from money experiences we had growing up. So you want to kind of dig into those if you're unhappy with how money is working in your life, both personally, individually, and as a couple. So I like to ask people what their first reaction is when they see someone driving a fancy car, especially if that fancy car is cut you off or drove into the crosswalk as you're getting ready to cross the street. What's your gut reaction to that person? Is it, oh, what a jerk, that rich jerk? Would you have a different reaction if it was a Toyota Camry? And if that's the case, I think most of us want to be wealthy, but we also have like this internal disdain for people who are privileged. And that may be playing itself out in the way that we maybe keep ourselves from hanging on to more money.
Well, Kelly, let's get back to that in a minute. We're going to be taking a break here on Relevant Radio, 950 AM in Chicago. We'll be right back.
During his visit to the U.S., Pope Francis called us to cooperate generously for the common good. Through the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, we lift up our Holy Father's message of walking with the poor. You can join the efforts made by CCHD by donating during the annual collection weekend on November 21st and 22nd. Visit chicagopeaceandjustice.org/CCHD to learn how you can contribute to ending poverty.
Hello, I'm Todd Williamson, Director of the Office for Divine Worship, inviting you to attend a planning day for the liturgies of the Triduum. Priests, deacons, liturgy directors, everybody involved in planning the Triduum liturgies will find this gathering extremely beneficial. We'll give you a liturgical and theological overview of the Triduum, with emphasis on Scripture, environment, RCIA Rights, and the Music of the Season. And speaking of music, our keynote speaker is well-known composer of liturgical music, Dr. Stephen Janko. The date is Friday, December 4th. The place, St. John of the Cross in Western Springs. Go to www.odw.org to register. That's www.odw.org to jumpstart your planning of the Triduum Liturgies.
This is Frank Hannigan, and I'm back with Kim Haggerty on Marriage and Family Matters, Relevant Radio, 950 AM in Chicago. And today we're talking with Kelly Long about the real significant topic of money. And before we went into break, Kelly, we're talking a little bit about perhaps attitudes or values when it comes to money. Can you go into a little bit more detail on that?
Yeah, sure. I think it's just important to really get to know where your spouse or fiancé or spouse's money attitudes come from. We were talking before the break about your first reaction when you see somebody driving a nice car, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have kind of an aversion to that, but we want to be wealthy. I think it's worth exploring that, because that may be an internal conflict that plays out in petty money fights. I think, you know, money tends to have a scarcity attitude tied to it. There's a lot of research and books that have been written about having an abundance mindset in general. I mean,
Sure.
And I think that applies to money, too, that if you concentrate so much on not having enough, and that plays out in your life just as the same as when you have gratitude for the things in your life, you tend to see more of it. So, you know, digging into why you might be feeling those senses of scarcity really can help you understand each other better. I actually had a conversation recently with a client through our financial helpline who said, you know, my husband and I are making four times what we made when we first got married, and yet we're still living paycheck to paycheck. What the heck is going on? And so I said, well, that's your money mindset. So what you have to do first is figure out why you have that money mindset, and it's probably because of the way you grew up. If you got an allowance and you spent it all and waited until your next allowance, or if your parents, if that's how they operated, then most likely that's where you got it from, and breaking that cycle is going to take little tweaks over time. You'll have to evolve your money mindset. It's not just going to be something you can turn off by saying, all right, I'm just not going to spend money on clothing from here on out. You have to find ways to trick yourself out of that habit.
You know, Kelly, it kind of leads to, like, in the past, when I got married, when Frank got married probably, mm-hmm. couples married relatively young, and they didn't have much to start with, you know, kind of building their finances together. But couples seem to be getting married later. They come into marriage with more. Is it harder for them to share their money? Is that part of the value system here?
I definitely think that's a big part of it. So by the time we're getting married, I think the average age of first marriage is now like 27 or 28.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We've had time to establish financial habits, good or bad, independently. So even if for people who are getting married older just because they're finishing up medical school or some type of advanced degree, you still have money in your life as an adult. And so, like my parents for sure were those people. They got married when they were 20, whereas my husband and I were almost 20 years older than that. So they found a way that worked for them, because when they first started off, they didn't have anything, and they had a different mentality about where they were going together. I think part of it is when you get married younger, you also create and develop your values about life together.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. And when you get married later, I think it can be a good thing, because you're pickier about your spouse. So you're more likely to find somebody who truly gels with you, and the chances of you growing apart and trying to fight to stay together through those changes in your personality are less likely to happen. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, some of those things that are different about you are going to be much more glaring, because they've been a part of you for so long.
So what do you do differently than how your parents did things?
Well, my parents found a way. It was funny. They're totally a spender, married a saver, and so they fought about money just like I think anybody else would. So they found a way to manage their money that worked for them due to their opposites. So even to this day, they're both retired. They still divide the bills and keep separate accounts. So with my mom's pension, she pays the mortgage. With my dad's pension, he pays the car payments. Now, it's not a hit yours and mine thing. They don't, like, pay 50% of the mortgage. It's just that when they decide to make a new purchase or when they decide to add a new bill, they decide who's going to pay the bill. Whereas it works for them. They've been married for 44 years now, and no plans for that to change.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. You know, when we work with couples, we want them to come to the idea of one mind, one heart, mm-hmm. when it comes to a lot of different topics. But certainly when it comes to money, if you're set in your ways a little bit more, it could be more difficult to make changes. If you're in your early 20s and you're sort of muddling through things and figuring things out together financially, whether it's a right way or a wrong way, it's our way, and we sort of figure it out. What would be certain strategies that, you know, you might offer to young folks to say, you know, here are some things to think about as you're planning your financial future together?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that combining your financial identities is a process. So the way you feel about each other is going to be different from that, even on your first anniversary, than it would be on your third anniversary. And I think both of you, Kim and Frank, can relate to that, that, you know, your relationship evolves in every way. And I think money does too. So my husband and I, we have a hybrid method. So we have a joint account that we pay all of our bills and joint expenses. And that includes health care, gifts, groceries, dining out. So our separate money isn't a his and hers thing. It's just for fun stuff so that it makes it easier for us to make decisions about how much we have to just money to, like, kind of blow. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, it's obviously, I'm such a stereotype, shopping and wine. and for him, he spends most of his money on iTunes, gadgets. But the thing is, I don't have to sneak purchases into the house because before we determine how much we would have for kind of our fun money, we first made sure we were accomplishing our shared goals together. So it's not about paychecks. I'm the one that has a 401k plan available. My husband's self-employed. So we fully fund my 401k. My paycheck is, like, not even enough money to pay half of the mortgage, let alone half of our bills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an equal amount of money that we're contributing to things. It's a fair amount of money. And we both have kind of that equal amount to blow on what we want. And then we just don't, there aren't any questions. So if I walk in the door with a Lululemon bag, I don't get that side eye like, so what goal are we compromising here? And I think that's what one of the issues I mentioned. I talked to a newlywed couple this week, good friends of mine, and he's definitely the steward of the money in their family. And she said, well, the thing is, he takes all of his spending money and pays down our debt with it, and I just feel guilty about that. And I said, well, Josh, are you okay with that? And he said, well, yeah, I'm fine with it. She needs her money to get her nails done and shop at The Gap, and I'm fine with that. He said, what the problem is when she spends all of her money and then she dips into her joint money. And I was like, that's the problem. You're violating the agreement. So that's when the discipline comes in.
Yeah, that's when they have to do some serious talking. Kelly, we have to take a break again, so we'll be back in just a minute or two on Marriage and Family Matters here on AM 950, Relevant Radio in Chicago.
Everybody, let's pray the rosary.
Don't forget to say grace.
We have to do what God wants us to do.
My mom laid the foundations for me to discover God.
How does this bring you closer to God?
The path to holiness is in doing God's will.
If you are called to be a priest, that's how you will be fulfilled.
My mom helped me get through difficulties in my discernment.
Think of the big picture.
Keep things in perspective.
Are you praying?
My mom played a huge role in my journey to the priesthood.
She still does.
Our moms nurture our vocations.
Without my mom being who she is, there's no chance I'd have entered the seminary.
My mom says she had a feeling I would be a priest.
To hear the call of God, we need to be in a position to hear it.
Hearing God starts at home, with the family.
Thank you, Mom.
I would not be at the seminary if it wasn't for you.
Our seminarians were encouraged by their parents to discover God's call in their lives. Do you encourage your son? St. Joseph College Seminary, the best place to discern. For more information, visit cometojoseph.org.
Calling all seniors, it's never too late to be a teenager. Puzzles, recipes, birthdays, memories, and much more are found in the Teenager newspaper. Teenager News is published for senior citizens as an outreach ministry of Catholic Charities. Subscribe for free by calling 312-655-7425. That's 312-655-7425. Or email teenager@catholiccharities.net. That's teenager with a K, teenager@catholiccharities.net.
You're listening to Marriage and Family Matters on Relevant Radio, 950 AM in Chicago. We're talking to Kelly Long about money, so let's talk about stewardship.
And part of that, Kelly, when we talk about stewardship, you know, many parishes in the Archdiocese are participating in the To Teach Who Christ Is campaign. And part of that for couples and families is to pledge some money to support that campaign. What about suggestions, you know, stewardship kind of model for families to free up, you know, an extra $100 or a couple hundred dollars each month to donate to this campaign? Any ideas on that?
Well, I mean, in order to find the money, it needs to be a priority. So clearly this would be a priority for your family. So just adding it in as kind of a bill would be the mindset to take about it. And then to actually find it if money is a little tight. I did the math. So $100 a month translates to about $3.50 per day. And I went to Starbucks yesterday and got my favorite tall no-whip mocha, and it was $4.08. So it's actually less than your favorite Starbucks drink. A tall mocha costs more than what you could. So, you know, if you can find money for those little treats, you can probably find an extra $3.50 per day. Maybe that's foregoing a dinner out each month. Or I know downtown it's, like, easy to spend $20 on lunch in the Loop. So just once per week skipping lunch is already $80 per month.
Okay, so as long as it's a priority, and then taking a look at maybe some of the other areas that we spend money sometimes without even realizing it.
Right.
We could come up with that $100 or a couple hundred dollars a month.
I know on our online pre-Cana that you're the financial speaker on, you talk about couples having a money meeting each month. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's something that my husband and I do. So I think when you are trying to figure out money with each other, I think a lot of money fights come because one of the spouses is caught off guard with a loaded topic. So but rather than just randomly bringing up a question you have or something you want to discuss about money, maybe like in the car on the way to church or over dinner or, you know, while you're giving the kids a bath, having a designated time to talk about it allows you both to prepare mentally for talking about something that might be a hot topic. It also keeps you on track for any things you need to do around it. So my husband and I just finished putting getting all of our insurance together. So we applied for life insurance so that we wanted to have it in place before we started a family. So there was a lot of steps involved in that, finding an agent, figuring out how much insurance we needed, what types. And then once we actually did the application, having the meetings, and then we got approved, and where does that fit into the budget? So we just kept that as almost an agenda item for our standing money meeting. We meet every other Friday morning before work. Now, obviously, things come up in the meantime, and that's where I've learned very quickly to say, hey, honey, we need to talk about this. Can we talk about it tonight? So giving that heads up gives him time to process his thoughts. So instead of just at dinner going, hey, we need to figure this out, are similar in our money DNA. He's a little bit more frugal than I am, but we're both very conscious of our goals and stuff. So it's a little bit more of a challenge, I think, where one person maybe has some financial fears. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of things. They don't know. They don't want their spouse to make fun of them. So it has to be a safe place. You have to be loving and caring, and it always comes back to respect.
And if you know the meeting is going to be happening every 2 weeks or month or whatever works for the individual couple, that way you know that you're able to bring it up. It's only a couple of days from now. We can talk about it. There's very little chance for resentment to build up or anger to build up because, you know, this is a topic and, you know, money, we deal with money every day. It's an issue that we are going to have a conversation about. And if you do it, like you said, with respect and love, then money becomes that bonder we talk about in marriage prep, not a buster that, you know, drives couples crazy. We're always talking about money, and it seems like we're always fighting about it, and that's not where people want to be.
Yeah, and I think where those conversations devolve is when you get into accusations. Well, if you weren't always buying, you know, paying for your brother's stuff, if you weren't always helping people out of binds, then we'd be better off. Like, you have to leave the accusations at the door and maybe instead dig into, why do you feel such a sense of responsibility for your family members? How can we wean them off being leaning on us financially? Tackle it together instead of it being like a me versus you thing, but us versus them.
So that kind of gets back into family of origin.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I worked with a friend one time who really was struggling with, she had gotten a big promotion at work, like doubled her income, and her family just, she had always bailed them out, but even more so they were expecting her to just help them all the time, and she isn't doing him any favors. What happened if she lost her job? Then they would be suffering as well. So and the solution to that was to build into the budget a monthly amount that she set aside into what we called her angel fund, so that when family came along and asked for money, she could say, I have this much available. Will that help you? And when the money was gone, it was gone. And that really helped her create the boundary with her family and also stay true to her own goals and values. And I think that would be work just as successfully in a marriage.
Well, I think that's really helpful. Like you said, that does set the boundary, especially if your spouse would be concerned about how much money is going to her family or his family. So,
yeah.
Kelly, for the couple, just quickly as we sort of wrap things up in the next couple minutes, for the couple that doesn't have these meetings, what would be some early warning signs that, boy, we better get our act together? Are there warning signs that that you could elaborate on?
Yeah, one of them would be if you feel like you have to hide purchases or hide things financially from your spouse, whether you're opening up credit cards or you've gotten a little bit deeper into debt than you wanted and it's spinning out of control, put the brakes on by humbly going to your spouse and saying, listen, I need you to be understanding, but I've screwed up. Can we work together to fix this? The sooner you have that conversation, the better. Another warning sign would be just from the flip side, if your spouse seems to be overly sensitive about, especially this time of year with Christmas and you might be traveling and buying gifts, if there's a high sensitivity to you spending too much, dig into that. Why? Maybe your spouse is worried about losing their job. Maybe they've got something going on they are trying to protect you from. Hot button issues that are abnormal would be another warning sign.
Okay, so these warning signs then really, I think, would help lead a couple towards making the decision, let's have these meetings.
Absolutely.
Let's have those, because couples don't like to argue or don't like to fight, but I know there was research done out of Creighton University, it's probably 10 or 15 years old now, called Time, Sex, and Money, the First 5 Years of Marriage, and money was one of the top issues that newly married couples, couples married in the first few years, but Marilyn and I are married for, 40 years, and we have friends that still struggle, and sometimes we still struggle with money. It's an issue that's there every day, and it means more than just finances.
Exactly. So there's probably never going to be no fighting about it ever. It's just a matter of, are you fighting to win or are you fighting to come to the same page? And you want to try to get on the same page, not win.
Well, and Kelly, Pat and I will be married 37 years, like next week. So some of the stuff you've talked about today is going to be very helpful for us, too. So we really appreciate that you've been on with us today. So we've been talking to Kelly Long from Financial Finesse, who's also the presenter on finances in our online Precana, CatholicMarriagePrepClass.com, about finances and marriage. And Kelly, thanks for helping to point out how couples can take money, which can be a major cause of fights, and move it from being a buster in their marriage to making it a bonder.
And be sure to watch for Kelly's book, What Your Financial Advisor Isn't Telling You. That's going to be released on January 5th. And for the Marriage and Family Ministries Office, thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again next month. Take care, everybody.
Join us every Monday through Friday at this time for the Catholic Community of Faith. You can stream our programs live or download past programs by going to our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV.